I think a lot of people, they feel bad and they get depressed because of it, and doctors will prescribe them psychiatric medications, but really there's actually a physical problem that's going on. And if you don't feel good physically, you're not going to feel good mentally. And that was certainly the case for me. I wasn't feeling good either way.
Mom.
Yes, what?
Slow down.
Sound familiar?
I get it. Mom life is demanding. There are no off hours, the pay is minimal, and your bosses are relentless. But there is a way that you can start giving back to the most important person in your life, you. As a mom of four, I get what it's like, but I promise you can start to enjoy life more, take time for yourself, and cultivate a sense of inner peace that all your friends will notice. My name is Jessica, and I'm the host of the Mom Slow Down podcast, where we will tackle topics important to us moms, discover the clues to healing and happiness, and take time just for us. Thank you for joining me on this journey to a happier, healthier, more satisfied version of you. Looking for even more joy? Check out my membership site at jessicanicole.love. Indulge in a yoga class, sip on a glass of Cabernet, or challenge your skills in the kitchen. But remember, Mom, slow down. Hey there, Mom Slow Down podcast listeners. Today, we're going to tackle the topic of gut health. I'm welcoming to the show Samantha Simpson, a posture and yoga coach and holistic speaker located right here in Indianapolis. She's devised her own recipe for healing, and she is here to share it exclusively with you. Let's take a listen.
I am a posture and yoga coach. I teach people a radical and revolutionary new style, a new paradigm of alignment called Bowspring. And it's a lot different than what modern postural yoga is.
Like an Iyengar yoga.
It's very much different than Iyengar. And actually, I was a big fan. I was way alignment junkie. Iyengar, I love the straight up and linear. Bowspring is different. It's curvy and it's springy. Instead of being linear and stacked and static, it's curvy and pulsating and bouncy. It's healthy for the joints, and I found healing for the pelvic floor and so many different things. It's mind-body healing. It changes the way when you reposture yourself, even if you're reposturing the way that you're holding a pen and a fine motor skill, you're developing and exercising neuroplasticity. So I found that when I started absorbing the Bowspring, it started changing more than my body, but my mind. And so when I work with people, sometimes people come to me and they need help with some area of their body. And sometimes it's another area of their life, such as communication issues, or I've worked with people on the autism spectrum. They don't know how to connect with people. And this has changed them from the inside out, from the outside.
That's incredible. So let's jump back and dig into Bowspring a little bit, because I'm not familiar with it. So bouncy, springy, that sounds kind of playful and fun. Are you working through traditional yoga postures within this kind of unique modality, and you're just moving a different way? Explain that a little bit better.
It's kind of hard to describe. Yes, there are some yoga poses that are similar to, there are Bowspring poses that are similar to the modern postural yoga counterpart. But the difference is, instead of trying to look like a picture of a form, to be in the Bowspring, you have to be following a recipe of alignment and engagement. The Bowspring is not looking at a picture and copying that. You could actually mimic a Bowspring posture and not actually be in the Bowspring. To be in the Bowspring, you have to have an openness in the central channel, which is basically an esoteric passageway from the crown of the head out the pelvic floor. So we don't hold any bandhas. There's no bandha locks throughout. That river is open. It's an open exchange. So if you're tightened along the way, you're not in the Bowspring. And that's something that, you know, I can't tell by looking at you. Mm-hmm. Also, there is a uniform, we're seeking a uniform engagement of everywhere at the same time so that nothing is overworking. So we, in our body, have martyr muscles that bear the brunt of our daily life, in particular, the trapezius and the quads, the low back. And what happens is these muscles get overworked and they get tight, and there's an imbalance, there's a laxity somewhere else. And so Bowspring seeks to soften where it's too tight and to tighten where it's too soft. We do this by engaging a hug of tone around the bone. And to help us with the tone around the bone, we have something called the hollow. So a hollow is an empty space. So we put an empty space, and the empty space allows for the springiness. So an empty space could be one hollow, for example, would be that the very last joint of the finger, there'd be a hollow there, an empty space. And when you don't have the hollows, when you're locked out or when you're hyperextended, you don't have the advantage of hugging the uniform tone around the bone or having the advantage of minimal force for ultimate power.
Awesome. Bowstring
is a ready position.
Yeah, like ready for anything.
Ready right? for anything.
So going back, something you touched on, pelvic floor and bandhas in yoga, which is really kind of interesting. I see a pelvic floor, women's pelvic floor specialist, a physical therapist. And I'm not in every woman's body, but I know my experience. And in my practice of yoga over the last, 12 years, I mean, it was in and up, bandhas engaged, which traditionally were meant for men, right? So yoga was men 5,000 years ago, not women. And so years of hugging in pelvic floor, has really been a disservice and seeking out that kind of physical therapy and not realizing how my hip pain, torn labrum, other issues that I've developed started with that pelvic floor dysfunction, that kind of over engagement of really not understanding pelvic floor engagement or what it was doing or why, or especially in my early years of yoga and just tightening. I mean, everything was just, which obviously leads to bowel discomfort. And we kind of talk about that entire elimination system is affected when the pelvic floor is off or is it tight.
I know 100% that is one of the greatest contributing factors to what happened to me and the problems that a lot of people are experiencing, especially the sedentary culture. And with last year, everybody's doing their work on their couch all day.
Yeah. And posture is just overall posture, how we hold our body, right, is the biggest offender. When someone would come into me at my studio and it's like, okay, you can come and do yoga with me for an hour a week, but if you're sitting like this, all slumped over, or the way you're sitting in your car, you're leaning to one side, how you stand is that repeat offender, how you sleep, something that you do for multiple hours a day. So let's talk a little bit about your journey to healing, your personal journey, because I think it's really brave and incredible that you want to share your story.
Thank you, Jessica. And I want to thank you for inspiring me to share my story. It's been quite some time coming, and you sharing your story encourages me and other people to share theirs as well.
Thank you.
So I was a yogi from a young age. I wasn't good at any other sports, but I was actually good at yoga. And so, or I was flexible, I'll say that. So I got really into it. And as I did it through my 20s, and as I got into my early 30s, I started to add other exercise modalities. I started running, doing cardio, jumping kind of stuff. And a little foreshadowing here, I am very sensitive to my body, and I've actually developed that sensitivity over the years. But back then, I remember feeling a heaviness each time my foot would land on the ground when I was on the treadmill or running, a heaviness in my pelvic floor. And since I was a kid, I would alternate between constipation or diarrhea, and I didn't really think a lot about it until probably my early 30s, when I started to pair what I was doing exercise-wise with what was happening in my digestion. When I would go running, for example, sometimes I would have to stop and go have diarrhea or something. And then eventually the diarrhea went away and there was actually just constipation. And I went through a completely miserable, I would not wish this on my worst enemy, phase where I couldn't poop for about 2 years without taking an enema or taking a bunch of laxatives. And even the laxatives at one point wouldn't do anything at all.
Our elimination system is so important to our toxicity, how we are able to nourish our bodies. That is such a struggle. 2 years is a really long time to suffer.
Oh my God. And it was affecting me in so many different ways. And I knew it was the fact that I couldn't eliminate, but I had spots all over my body for a year. I went to doctors, dermatologists, they're like, it's idiopathic, which if you don't know what that means they don't know what it means. They don't know what it's from. And I'm like, I know what it's from. I can't poop. And I've got toxins in my body. And they're like, well, go see a gastroenterologist. I had tons of tests, really invasive tests. And basically nothing was helping me. They'd be like, well, here's a prescription or here, take some laxatives. But that wasn't helping the problem. In fact, some were making it worse. And at one point, I had a very invasive test that showed I had pelvic organ prolapse, which it really validated for me something that I knew deep down already, which I had actually shared.
That heaviness feeling.
And I told a physician this before. I thought I might have that. And she wrote a psych note and told me, asked me if I'd been watching too much TV, you know, those.
Yeah, because they don't want a diagnosis. They want you to just come in with their symptoms and allow them to do their work. But medicine is also a practice, right? And a practice, not a perfection.
It was really frustrating. I thought I was going crazy. I felt like I was going crazy. It was a miserable time of my life because that was all I could think about. And it made it hard to have friends. It made it hard to work because I felt terrible all the time.
Yeah. How isolating for you, and how you feel. You don't feel like yourself, and then you're not able to put that forward and wanting to be social, wanting to be, you know, when you just feel crummy.
I think a lot of people, they feel bad and they get depressed because of it. And doctors will prescribe them psychiatric medications, but really there's actually a physical problem that's going on. And if you don't feel good physically, you're not going to feel good mentally. And that was certainly the case for me. I wasn't feeling good either way. And as a result of the constipation, I developed a SIBO, which is a small intestine bacterial overgrowth. So it made me very sensitive to anything I ate. So just eating something as innocuous as an apple would bloat my belly to it. It looked like I was 4 months pregnant, and it just felt so tight and full and really uncomfortable. I tried dozens of elimination diets, ones where I was, it made me so sad because I couldn't eat anything and they didn't really help a lick either.
And it's hard. I've had, you know, a bunch of testing done where it came back sensitive to every single food but filbert nuts and sardines. I'm like, I don't even know what a filbert nut is. Who's eating sardines? You know, that just gets you really defeated because I imagine as, you know, a yogi, you're nourishing your body and I'm just trying to eat fruits and vegetables and I'm trying to eat what I consider healthy and I just feel terrible. And it doesn't correlate. There's that disconnect when you're suffering from these issues.
Exactly. Yeah. On the outside, I was doing the right things, eating healthy, vegetarian, exercising, but on the inside, I was miserable.
I've been called the healthiest unhealthy person someone's ever seen. So I definitely feel for that. You know, on the outside, it looks like you're doing all the right things and you're just suffering, you know, internally. And that's a tough place because then people don't believe you. You go to doctors and they're like, no, you look fine to me.
Yep. You're on paper. You're fine. Your blood pressure, your heart rate, everything's good. You're good to go. But
yeah,
now,
you're like, no, I don't feel with, listen to me. I'm in my body. I don't feel good.
Right. Right. Yeah. And the thing that you asked me about, what led to my healing? So I think it was a combination of things, and I had to go through the allopathic path to realize that wasn't helpful. Even the functional medicine path I took those sensitivity tests too. That wasn't helpful either. I got online and I was reading some discussion threads about SIBO and IBS, and someone mentioned pelvic floor. I linked that with that test I had had a couple of years earlier that said I had prolapse, and I thought, okay, as a last resort, I'll check out this pelvic floor physical therapist. At the same time, I also saw a flyer for Mayan abdominal massage, and it said it helped with IBS as well. So I tried them both out around the same time. The pelvic floor physical therapy, I learned so much, and combined with the Mayan abdominal massage, and I took those two methods, and what I learned from them and started working on myself on my own to develop something that helped in my healing. I also started learning neurofeedback from my cat at the time. This is kind of an interesting story.
Tell me about that. That sounds wild.
I found out that to figure out a way to start pooping again, I had to combine a recipe. I had a recipe of things to do. It was the pelvic floor therapy, abdominal massage, and learning how to switch my nervous system state. And I learned this from the cat. So every morning I would wake up, I had to wake up 2 hours before I had to be somewhere to do the recipe to get myself to go to the bathroom. And part of the recipe I figured out was that this cat would like to come and she'd like to lay down on my belly. But if I tensed my belly at all, she would get up and go. Well, I like to have the cat on my belly because it was a long 2 hours before I actually got to go to the bathroom. So to get her to stay, I would have to make my belly be really soft and not tense the belly at all.
Wow.
And I started to realize that was when it got really soft, then I could go. So what I was doing was I was soothing myself and putting myself in a parasympathetic state, because if you're stressed out and about, am I going to go to the bathroom today? I need to go. I got to go. You're not going to go.
Yeah, no, it's suffering. I suffer from insomnia. That's that same thing where I'm like, if I think about going to bed or trying to go to bed, you know, you're immediately, your heart rate shoots up, everything tenses, you're in fight or flight, and then you're lost. You know, you really got to work yourself out of it. That's incredible. I love that you were able to communicate with your cat in that way, right? That was such a soothing, and to correlate that to relaxation. Because it's so, I don't know if, like, I was in high school and I remember probably being like 16 years old. And it was the first time I was standing there like high school does. And I'm looking at myself and my belly in the mirror, and I learned to suck it in. And then I've sucked it in for the next 25 years until now I'm 40 and I'm finally like really learning to like let my belly go. All of those years of tensing things in, and for vanity, for just being stressed or whatever. I mean, we don't realize these little things and how they affect us in the long run.
Oh my God, you are speaking to the choir. I've sucked it in since I was little too. And I sucked it in so much that sucking in was more comfortable.
It was normal.
Letting it go. Like, I tell myself to let it go. And that's what I learned the bow spring. So the bow spring was the icing on the cake. So in this formula that I developed, I don't have to do the recipe anymore because I'm living in this posture that allows my alimentary canal to be open. The bow spring, we let go of the belly and just allow it to do its work. The organs go into the right places.
We're especially, we're tensed up, whether you've had pregnancy and everything gets squished in one direction or the other. And, you know, everything just becomes off. Just modalities of life, you know, like you said, sucking it in, you know, if your belly's meant to be relaxed and you're sucking it in for 20 years, your organs are not going to be in the right spot. They're not going to be happy. Your liver's not happy. You know, nobody's really communicating to one another, you know, and you end up suffering, whether it comes out as chronic pain issues, IBS, which is a huge issue. Now there's like, do you have opioid-induced constipation? Let me give you a pill for that. Do you have IBS? Let me give you a pill for that. And we just end up as a culture just being inundated with pharmacology medications, you know, just one pill after another. And we're never really getting to the root of our issues.
Yeah. And I hear you. And from that, I hear and I see that we're putting a chemical Band-Aid on a mechanical issue. And
absolutely.
We used to corset ourselves with tight clothing. Now we corset ourselves. We still corset ourselves with tight clothing, but now we suck it in, and we use exercises that help us suck it in.
Yeah, absolutely. The more pain, you know, no pain, no gain for sure. So pelvic floor, let's talk a little bit about that. You know, men and women have a pelvic floor, you know, it's not just women, and men also too suffer. My husband, God love him, he'll probably kill me if I put this out there, but I had him going to a functional medicine doctor, you know, elimination system was not working all right. And I've got him into a physical therapist, and men too can have these chronic IBS issues that may, or impotence, you know, early ejaculation, all dealing with pelvic floor tightness. It is a hugely undervalued part of the body, and it's somewhat taboo, you know, especially if you've ever been involved in pelvic floor physical therapy. It is an intimate therapy.
Yes.
It's so beneficial, you know, and I think talking about this kind of stuff and saying, you know, how much it does benefit kind of takes that veil of shame off or that taboo off. And I think it's really important.
If men knew that this pelvic floor help affected their erections, they would all be lining up for this.
You would think, right? You would think.
But they don't know. They don't know. But yeah. But we know it does. This is directly related on a cellular and glandular level to what is going on there. And
absolutely.
The prostate, the bladder. If you have to push to pee, or if you have to meditate for 5 minutes, there might be something up with your pelvic floor.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And seek out a pelvic floor therapist, a specialist. Absolutely. So you created this really beautiful kind of recipe to health. And then you're out there sharing the story, right? You're sharing this wealth of knowledge and healing others. You know, that I think from a place of teaching comes from those who have suffered, which is this inspiration to share. And when you find something that finally works for you, you do want to shout it from the rooftops and be like, hey, I've been there. I've been suffering. You know, you don't have to suffer. So tell me a little bit about the workshops and stuff that you've done and how you've healed others.
I remember when I was suffering the most, I was going into these groups on Facebook and I'd see like everybody talking about how horrible it was and they're just looking for help. And I remember thinking like, there's nobody on here telling what worked or saying that they were healed. And I thought either that means that nobody's healing from this, or it means that the people who are healing aren't just like going about their daily life because they're all better now. And I thought,
isn't usually the case, because if you're healing from something as major as, you know, elimination issues, IBS, chronic pain, you're like excited, you know, shout it from the rooftops. If you've got a key to some of those chronic issues, yeah, share the wealth.
Well, I told myself, if I figure this out, I will share it with other people. That's what I'm doing now. And it first started just teaching Bowspring alignment, but a lot of my clients are coming to me and telling me that they have problems, pelvic floor and gut issues as well. And so I felt like this was time to share my story about this. So I'm doing a workshop on the 23rd of January. That's probably going to be after this takes place, but I'm going to share abdominal massage techniques, pelvic floor opening, the opening posture of the bowspring, and other tips and tools that I've learned and used to heal my body and my elimination.
That's incredible. Will you do more of these workshops, I hope?
Probably. This is my first one on gut health, and I've had difficulty spreading the word about it because I think it is so taboo. And, mm-hmm. and the forums that I used to go on to talk about my problems, it seems like they don't want to hear about the solution. Like I'll say something and they'll be like, no, you can't advertise on here. Well, how do I tell people?
Yeah. And it's so interesting. I think, you know, whether it's sexual issues or elimination issues, especially something that deals with gut, that there still is this kind of taboo. We don't want to talk about it. I mean, I would guess, and I don't know the stats, but that there's probably 80% of like every American is dealing with some kind of, if not way more than that, some kind of chronic bowel issue, whether it's chronic constipation or some kind of IBS or, you know, that constipation diarrhea, you know, oscillation or bloating, gut health. I mean, we have also as a nation just fed our bodies with crap. I mean, for lack of a better word, and we're overstressed, you know, and it's also shifting, I think, people's mind frame from like getting to the root of problems versus just taking a pill for that. You know, my husband came from that. Well, I'm just going to take a pill for that. I have a high cholesterol. I'm going to take a pill for that. I'm like, well, wait. You know, you're taking a pill for that at 40, and then what happens at 50? And so you're gonna be lugging your bag of pills with you. You know, by the time you're 70, you can't go anywhere.
Yeah, so. There's a different way that our bodies can heal themselves. I truly believe that.
I mean, yeah, we can grow human life. We can. I mean, we are made to heal ourselves, and it does require a little bit of insight and kind of maybe what's the word I'm looking for. There is effort, I think, to healing yourself, and there is some work to be put in versus just kind of the mindless idea that the doctor's prescribing a pill, I'm going to take that, I'm not going to think about it. So you kind of have to have that gateway open a little bit to be at least more open-minded of kind of healing yourself. But yeah, shout it from the rooftop. I think there's so many people that you could help with these different modalities.
Yes. Now I'm just becoming braver every day to share my story of how I healed from this, and I want other people to experience that as well.
Because there are so many that are suffering silently, you know, especially with, you know, when we talk about these kind of taboo issues, we keep coming back to that word. But the more that we, especially as women, can be vulnerable and open and say, hey, I'm suffering, this is what I went through, I'm out on the other side, you know, and this is what I learned. It's huge. It really does bring the community of women together as a collective, you know, as a healing collective. That's really awesome. Getting to the gut health as a whole, you know, this has kind of been over the last couple decades, even to scientists, to medical professionals, it's really something that I feel like they're not quite sure, you know, that they're still like, well, you know, we're really realizing that the gut plays a much bigger role and the overall health of a human being. And they're kind of on this, like, is it the brain? Is it the gut? You know, and we don't take into consideration how powerful the gut is.
Yes, there is actually, that reminds me, I remember I was talking to my psychiatrist at the time that I was seeing when I was going through all of this, and he actually gave me recommendations on how to talk to the gastroenterologist, because I'm like, they're not believing me. And he's like, actually, they get a lot of people with mental health issues coming in to see them.
I bet.
And he is getting a lot of people with gut issues going to see him. It's like the two specialties are one and the same. There's what more serotonin receptors in the gut than there is in the brain.
Absolutely, for sure. And this is like kind of in the world of medical information, this is rather new information, which is just fascinating. I mean, even my 8-year-old daughter suffered with, they diagnosed her, you know, which I hate, you know, at 7 with generalized anxiety disorder and ADHD. And I sought out functional medicine, and she had huge overgrowth of E. coli in the gut, and she had parasites and all of these things. We've been working for the last 18 months on healing that. And I've seen her anxiety, you know, go from like what was maybe a 9 for a little 7-year-old to be like extremely anxious down to like a 3, which is manageable just by healing your gut, truly.
That's a blessing. And she doesn't have to be stuck on pharmaceuticals for years. I was put on ADHD medication when I was 14 years old, and I stayed on that for 22 years.
Oh, wow.
Uninterrupted. I didn't learn the skills. I know now, because I had to learn these skills later on as an adult, that these skills are learnable. You could learn them. Somebody's going to teach them to you if you're little, but of course the medication, the ADHD medication, yes, it did help me. But I could have learned it a different way without being to a pharmaceutical with so many terrible side effects. If you want to talk about side effects, we'll talk about Adderall.
Yeah. I mean, long term, and you know, to each their own. And there's also, it's hard, I think, from my perspective as a parent, you know, again, I'm not standing in place of judgment of anyone in any situation, but for me, you know, I was going to go through these other avenues. When my daughter is old enough and she can make decisions, it's like, okay, I, you know, maybe if she could speak her mind and say, all right, I'm really struggling in school and I want to go this route, then you can start to explore them. It's hard when you're young and you get put on medication, you don't really even know why.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was for me. And I don't mean to sound judgmental about it either. It did help me because I didn't have anybody to teach me, and I wouldn't be where I was today without it. But I'm glad that I'm off of it now. I can say that.
Sure. Yeah. And long term, again, any medication that we take long term has effects on the body. I mean, things aren't meant to be taken for 20 and 30 years. I mean, that is a huge amount of time where your body becomes dependent on this foreign substance. Yeah. So you talked a little bit about being able to work with children on the spectrum, autism, ADHD. Kind of how has that come to play, and how have you been able to work with these children?
I spent a few years working in applied behavior analysis. So it is a technique that is proven to help people with autism and ADHD. Actually, it's a technique that is proven to help people with depression and dementia as well. But unfortunately, insurance companies are only paying for the use of ABA for treating autism. So I learned so much about myself, about other people, about humans and behavior, studying this and working this. And I take it into my work with my clients.
That's really awesome. So let's talk about stress. Can we touch a little bit about sympathetic and parasympathetic and kind of how that relates, especially as we come out of, you know, what was a very stressful year, you know, and people probably are dealing with some health issues that maybe they didn't have before. And we can kind of correlate it back to stress as being a big cause of this.
Yes, exactly. As we were speaking before, when you are in the sympathetic nervous system, your body is primed, it's ready for fight or flight. And there's not going to be much digesting or eliminating going on when you are in that realm of this, of the autonomic nervous system. Anytime that you're triggered, and for me, it was learning how to notice my sympathetic nervous system triggers enable me, empower me to know when I need to take out my tools to downregulate myself. So for a lot of people, it's a sound. It could be like a visual disturbance. So clutter for me is something that triggers my...
Amen to that.
Yeah, clutter. It's a sound going by. So I've worked, when I work with people teaching them Bowspring, and working with people on the spectrum, I got to be very, very observant of what other people's triggers were. Because if something is out of place, visually out of place, that could trigger somebody. I've noticed with my clients, a car driving by really loud. I live by a roadway where cars like to race, could startle a client to their eyes start twitching back and forth, and they can no longer hear what I'm saying because their focus has gone to a different stimulus. And what's going on in their head is actually a release of neurochemicals that is putting them in fight or flight. And once you've released those chemicals in your body, it's going off in your body for men up to 8 hours, for women to 20 hours. So
if you have some constant stress or stress every few hours, then you're constantly in this fight or flight.
Exactly.
So you never get to what I call the rest and digest system,
exactly,
which is allowing us to sleep deeply, allowing our bodies to recover, you know, allowing us to work through our digestion and elimination system. And that never gets to be fully appreciated in the body. You're constantly getting ready to run from a bear. I mean, your body's like, whoo, adrenaline, ready to go.
Yes, exactly. So the first thing is noticing what your triggers are. Like, I had a client in here, a fly was buzzing around and he couldn't even hear me because it was a fly. Now, if I asked him, do flies trigger you? No, no, they don't. What are you talking about? Just a fly. But he was following it with his eyes. He couldn't hear me. It was so distracting for him that had put him into a nervous system state. He couldn't complete a command that I gave him when he was there. So figuring out what the triggers are for you. So you can figure out what triggers you by being very aware of your body. So has my breath changed? Am I breathing through my mouth now instead of my nose? Has respirations increased? Touching your low belly. That's it. That is a big, I can always tell if I'm stressed because the low belly gets really tight. Tightening the anus. That's another signal that you've started going there.
Yeah. And I think too, we get back to that base principle of yoga, that mind-body connection. And it first starts with awareness. You know, I think that's really beautiful. What are my triggers? How does my body react to stress? You know, if you're startled, you know, are you clenching your jaw? Do you start to sweat? Your heart rate elevating? Where else in your body are you experiencing these stressful situations? And then to be able to tap into that and notice when you're not in perceived stress. Like, you know, if a loud sound came, you know that you're startled and that was a stressful situation, or you were scared or spooked, or, you know, you almost got in a car accident. You can perceive that a little more readily than these kind of constant triggers that we're going through. Like you said, flies. I mean, just simple as something as a common house fly to be a trigger for this guy, or this man, this client that you were working with. And just taking that note and having even someone, you know, which is amazing as a teacher and observer, to be like, hey, have you ever noticed this? Which is really beautiful. Because without knowing what your triggers are, it's hard to identify even when you're in the relaxed state, or to get yourself there versus a heightened sense of awareness or stressful state.
Yes, exactly. And one of my favorite sounds is the sound of my digestion, because whenever I go get a massage or something, I can hear, if I hear a bowel movement, I'm like, ah, boom, I did it. I'm there. I made it to the parasympathetic.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny. I hadn't thought about it until now, but traveling for me is a trigger of stress, just being outside of your routine. And what's the thing that happens when you're outside of your routine? Your elimination system gets totally out of whack and you're not feeling good. You feel heavy. You feel lethargic.
I actually wrote that down when you sent me the questions to write about the stress, and I wrote down traveling, underlined it. I love to travel. Traveling's fun. Traveling's cool.
Yeah.
Even the good stress will shut me down. I stop. Like, I'm regular now, but if I travel,
I'm with you. I love to travel too, but it definitely throws my system off, and I'm just not myself. As much as I love, and I miss it, right? So travel, it's not been totally accessible over the last year, but it is something as simple as that, you know, and it may be new news to someone listening that, oh man, that happens to me too. I didn't realize that's my body experiencing stress.
I've noticed it changes my menstrual cycle. If I travel, my cycle is extended by 5+ days.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible. Our bodies are so smart.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, they really are. So smart, so smart. Wow, I really appreciate you sharing your beautiful journey and how you are sharing this transformation, sharing these healing modalities. And I really want to help spread that because I feel like there are a lot of people out there that are suffering silently, you know, and this is something that the more we talk about, the more we take that veil of shame off, that kind of not talking about or whatever, just making it more commonplace to express our journeys and our suffering and what someone may be going through. Someone else is experiencing the same thing. None of us are having new experiences, right, in the world. They've been done at one point or another. So thank you for that. And this is a question I love asking everyone because I feel like that's so different, but practicing self-love and what does that look like for you? How do you practice self-love or self-care?
How do I practice self-love or self-care? I like to take baths with essential oils. I give myself a massage daily movement and play. Mm-hmm. I am a child at heart and I honor my inner child's need for play. I like to play on playgrounds, hang upside down on monkey bars. I like to go roller skating, ice skating. And last year I started going to a trampoline park just for fun. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Don't underestimate the value of good play.
Yeah.
Right. Even as adults, I think we get so stifled and we're supposed to be so adulty and stoic and, you know, stressed out. But that value of play, that playfulness is really beautiful. Awesome, Samantha. So where can anyone find information about you? Maybe workshops you're having in the future, especially seeking you out to maybe I see you for some of these healing modalities. Where can they find more information?
People can find me via my website. It's thesamanthasimpson.com. If you go to samanthasimpson.com, she's a lovely painter in New York, but thesamanthasimpson.com. And you can schedule a consultation with me there. If you want more up-to-date information about workshops and what I'm doing, I invite you to find me on Facebook, Samantha Simpson. And if you listen to this, send me a message and let me know. I'll add you to my fun little group on Facebook, all about Bowspring. So the Bowspring group on Facebook, social media. I'd love to be your friend.
Awesome. And I will put all of those links in the show notes. So thank you again so much for your time and for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me, Jessica.